Hey guys, I'd like to take the time to thank Phoenix Shooting Bags for sponsoring the show and helping me keep the podcast free. Go check out their website, phoenixshootingbags.com. And if you want to purchase anything, just type in John Stallone, all one word, no space in between my name, in the shopping cart coupon area, and you will save 20% on your order. It's pretty sweet. They're awesome bags. If you like shooting and you like long range shooting, they are a must. They've really improved my accuracy and really helped me out with my clients guiding. It's made my life a lot easier helping guys get on deer, and it could do the same for you. So go and check them out, phoenixshootingbags.com, and let's roll into the next episode.
Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by the Phoenix Shooting Bags. This week we're going to talk about hunting in California. So I reached out to my good buddy Perry Cremens, who is an outfitter and longtime California hunter, and we're going to pick his brain a little bit. How's it going, Perry?
Great, John. Great. How's things in Arizona?
Good. Very good. Starting
just
really hot.
Yeah. You're probably just like us, though. You're like in that holding pattern before the draws happen and before we get to go for our big game hunts in the fall.
Yeah. And our deer draw is coming up here. The deadline is June 12th. Your deadline's coming up for big game draw there too, as well.
It is. It's June 2nd, and just like any draw, they get confusing, and every year you better check up on them and see what's going on if you want to not get left out.
Yeah, you guys had some big changes this year. I know you and I were talking yesterday or the day before, and you were saying something about B-Zone.
Yeah.
B-Zone tag is now. Excuse me. Now went to a draw, controls on.
And we kind of saw that coming because the B zone, which if you're familiar with California, the B zone is our northwestern part of the state that encompasses all of our wilderness, a lot of public land hunting, and it's been pretty popular. And so each year, it's getting closer and closer to the deadline, of August 1st. Once a tag sells out by August 1st, they roll it over to, what they call not necessarily a premium tag, but a mm-hmm. restricted tag. And the difference is, and this is something people really need to note, is the difference is, the B zone now, it used to be a two tag unit, so you can get two B tags, and you could go in the past. You've been able to go down as soon as the draw happens. You can go down to with your first tag application and your second tag application, and get a B tag with both.
Okay.
Yeah. Now what's happened though? They make it restricted, so you have to put in for a B tag. B is a big unit. It encompasses B1 through B6, so it's the whole northwestern part of California, all the way to the ocean. Basically, from the I-5 corridor, and from about Orland north to the ocean. Mm-hmm. So you can get that first tag the draw. You'd get it without using your points as well. So you could put in for a point or a premium tag, which be your X's or your late unit, something like that. And then your B as your second, you're going to draw it likely. After August 1st, you can go down with your second deer tag and apply for another B tag for any leftover tags.
Okay.
So that's the way you have to do it now, when in the past you used to be able to get them both at the same time. So you just have to wait till August 1st. And to give you an idea, the B zones have sold out, by August 4th every year now.
Okay. Let me back up a little bit, and let's talk about we'll keep this with deer, and then we'll just kind of touch on some of the other species that California has to hunt. But what are their hunting seasons, and like let's talk about the opportunities to hunt first, and then we'll go from there.
Sure.
Well, I guess what are the different seasons? We start in July, I know, in A zone for archery on that.
Oh. Zone.
So there's A zone, there's D zone, there's X, C, and B, correct?
Yep.
Okay.
And you're familiar with the A zones. You've hunted the A zones, so you know their archery season starts like the about the 10th, I think, or something of 14th. July. Yeah, the 14th of July. It's early. I mean, there's nowhere else in the country are there seasons going on for deer in July. That's for sure.
I know. That's why I go, because it's like, I mean, one, it gets me out of Arizona, and I hunt pretty close to the coast, so it's quite a bit cooler. And like you said, there's no other hunting going on, and where else, you know, what big game hunting can you do in July? There's really nothing. So
yeah,
it's just another opportunity for me to go. And I that's kind of that's why I started going there. And then I kind of fell in love with the hunt. But yeah, that starts in July. The archery season is July 14th. I believe it goes to August 5th this year.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have a general season that I think goes from, which is really early, like it's like one of the earliest rifle hunts there is August 11th to September 23rd. And that's an A zone. I've never hunted B, C, D, or X, so I don't know any of those, those hunts. I'm pulling it up right now. So C zone, their archery starts August 18th and goes to September 2nd. And then their generals, September 15th to October, mid-October.
Yeah.
D-zone.
And D-zone
is...
Go ahead, John.
Is August... Sorry. D-zone's August 18th to September 9th. And then again, they have a September 22nd to late October. I guess D-Zone has some November hunts, too. And I would imagine those are the premium, getting closer to a rut. Those November ones?
Yeah, actually, they're not labeled a premium yet because they don't sell out. So you can draw one of those pretty easy, the ones that go till November 11th.
Mm-hmm.
But the D-Zones... the D zones are the like the Sierras, so it can be pretty difficult hunting. It goes up to 13,000 feet, and also one thing to note in California, and you know this, there's migrating deer. So if you're going to hunt some deer in November, the first week of November on, they usually start migrating the middle of October, once winter hits, the food source dries up or freezes up high, and they start moving down. So, where you're going to hunt deer in the third week of September and where you're going to hunt them in the first week of November are two totally different places.
Right. So actually, now that you mentioned that, all those Sierra ones are all the only ones that are in November are your high Ds, like D11, D12. And so those are those desert units down by coastal Mexico. So they're probably not even running down there.
And there's not a ton of deer there. There's deer to hunt, don't get me wrong. But
yeah,
down there where they have the crosses between like the Inyo mule deer, the California mule deer, and the burro deer, you know, if you like the high, if you like desert, it's pretty cool, but it's still pretty difficult hunting.
Right. So now I'm looking at it too. So the X zone, they have an August 18th to September 9th. And then their general is October 6th to the 21st. I thought X zone had, forgive me if I'm wrong, but I thought they had a January hunt too, that you can hunt archery.
Well, they have some premium hunts. This, you know, keep in mind the premium hunts, which are like the muzzle loaders and the late archeries. They have a January hunt down there around Owens Valley, Anderson Flat or something like that. But yeah, they have very few January hunts, which, you know, some of those high mountain hunts, they're, if you hunt them in January, you have the risk of the antlers actually being off anyways.
Okay.
But yeah, not too many January hunts, but quite a few in December.
Okay,
late November, December. Where the deer are going to be rutting. They're going to be rutting, and they're going to be in their winter zone.
Because my buddy Chad Roberts, I believe he hunts X, and I know he hunts, it's like the same time as our archery, late archery season here. Because he lives in Yuma, so he just jumps over the border, and he's hunting archery. I could swear, and I might have to ask him, but I don't know, is there a hunt down there at that time?
Somewhere, yeah, in January there's a hunt. I'm not familiar with which one it is. I'm actually, like you, I'm bringing up some of these to see if they actually have this on the list of tags.
Yeah, let's see.
Yeah, which I have a PDF sitting here of the general season tags.
Hmm. Anyhow.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, obviously online you can find it. The California Digest is out now. There's quite a bit of information in there for, I mean, you know, not just deer. I mean, the deer in California is, you know, we have 9 species of deer in California, you know, including the subspecies, right?
Right.
But you have 3 species of elk, you have black bears, you know, you have all these different species of bighorn sheep, you know, antelope, just about anything you want to hunt is available in California. But most of those, you know, non-general species are, you know, you really got to figure it out because they're in the draw, which is June 2nd. And if you're not in with the points, you know, you're kind of behind, but you still have a chance. All of the units have a random tag, so you always have a chance. But obviously, as we all know, in the West, with points, you increase your odds.
Of course, yeah. Now, you said, so the sheep, you have Rocky Mountain, you have California, and desert, correct?
The sheep, we only have just the California bighorns, the desert bighorns.
Oh,
yeah, they're
Nelson's
bighorns.
California,
yeah.
I thought you had, okay, so I thought you said you had 3.
Yeah, they're Nelson's bighorns, which are not California. The California bighorns are just across the border into Nevada.
Uh-huh.
So Nelson's, which is a subspecies of the desert bighorn.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're giving out, it's like 29 tags, including the raffle and, you know, the special governor tags and Union Pacific tags. So,
mm-hmm.
Still quite a few, and I would say for desert bighorns, California probably has a bigger population than anywhere in the U.S. They're so restrictive of their units. There seems like every couple years they open a new unit with a tag or two.
Got it.
Which the Wild Sheep Foundation is helping out with that, you know, and putting up guzzlers. they're actually doing sheep studies with the biologists and mm-hmm. trying to open new ground, because there's little ranges in California, Southern California, that have, you know, plenty of sheep, you know, productive populations of sheep, and they've never been hunted. So it's some, you know, and if you get in on one of those opportunities, you know, it's you're gonna shoot a good ram for sure.
Oh yeah, yeah. So especially if they've not been pressured or whatever.
Sure.
So on the elk side, you have what, the Thule? Is there Rosies there too, right?
Yep. We have Thule's, Rosies, and Rockies. Only place in the country, and it's the only place in the country you can shoot all three. As you know, the Thule's are, you know, for lack of a better description, they've kind of made it a racket, you know, because including the Thule as one of the North American 29, in California being the only place you can shoot that Thule, harvest that Thule, and at the same time, the tags are in high demand. So,
right.
Yeah, they're really difficult to get the tags. So we have, you know, private land management Thule with our hunting business just for hunting. We have private land management tags for Thule, Rosie, and Rockies. But they're darn expensive, you know.
Oh yeah.
You're gonna pay $25,000 for a Thule tag.
I was gonna say, I looked into it and I actually was offered a smoking deal because of a friend of a friend to get one of the private land, you know, private ranch tags. What is that? It's a PLM tag, I think, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Private land management tag. Yeah. For like $10,000, and I was like, wow. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a lot of money for me. $10,000 is a ton, shit ton of money, but I knew that it was a cheap debt. I knew that was, inexpensive in comparison. And I was like, oh, man. I wanted to jump on it, but it's like, to fork out $10,000 to go shoot an elk. I mean, it's a species I need from the big 29, but it's like, man, that's tough.
Those
type of animals is the rich man's sport, unfortunately.
It's getting that way for sure. And what's happened is, so a lot of the guys that are still doing their North American 29, we have management Thule tags, which are 12.5, still kind of out of that range. But a cow tag, actually, a Thule cow tag, you can get for $3,500 or, you know, right around there, $3,500. So a lot of guys are just, they're going down and harvesting a cow in order to get their North American 29 just for that reason, you know.
Oh, I didn't know you can, or that it even counted.
It does. Yeah, the North American 29 is any legal harvested animal of that species.
Oh, you mean, okay, so I was thinking like Pope and Young or something like that. Okay.
Yeah. Now, if you wanted to, you know, and a lot of guys, what they do, and I won't say a lot, but a number of them that are into the North American 29, they'll go shoot through, like, especially the archery guys, they'll go through and harvest all 29 with whatever they can harvest. Then they'll go back through and do it a second time and try to upgrade their species and get a better animal.
Yeah.
Which that's not only a time commitment, but a it's financial commitment and time commitment.
big time. Talk a little bit about bear for a sec. Bear season coincides with archery deer in B zone. Is that correct?
It does. It starts that, what'd you say, the 18th, the third week of August, and goes through the 11th. Then we have a break. There's like a week break before the gun season. Then when the gun season starts on the 18th, then the bear season is open again for any weapon at that time. You know, you can use your bow still, or you can use a firearm, crossbow, whatever you want. But it runs all the way through Christmas.
Okay.
Unless, of course, if they get the harvest quota filled, which the harvest quota is 1,800 bears, which they haven't really, they haven't filled that since they outlawed hounds about 6 years ago. You know, they've been getting anywhere from about 900 to 1,500, maybe a little bit more. And really the guys that are shooting bears and harvesting bears right now are just guys out deer hunting that come across them, you know.
Yeah.
And it's pretty easy to come across one. If you want to shoot a bear in California, it's pretty easy to find one, you know, in that, you know, third week of September to the second week of October up in the wilderness. You know, they're mm-hmm. they're roaming pretty good. They're out really feeding heavy.
Yeah, I've seen a couple there in A zone when I was hunting. You know, deer, of course, the season wasn't open. Actually, I had one at like 36 yards or something like that. Just I was sitting underneath an oak tree kind of resting, and here comes this bear down the trail, walk right by me, and he had no clue I was there. Totally could have filled my tag if I had one.
But, yeah, and I mean, I'm of the opinion that they're not filling the quota, and it's probably they're probably not going to fill the quota during the general season that they have, simply because I mean it's if you're not a bear person that likes to go out and harvest bears and take them home for food or whatever, you're not going to go shoot a bear every year. You know, most guys will go out if they're deer hunting and they shoot a bear. They figure out, man, these things are a lot of work. I got my bear that I harvested a bear. I'm good, right? So
they're not gonna
fill that quota. So they have a quota. So what does it matter when the season is? So why not open it like in May or even April? You know, in spring when the bears start really getting active. You know, open it in April and let it run until the quota's filled. You know.
Yeah, that would be smart. But we don't always do things smart.
No, they don't. And unfortunately, California, especially, and you know, they have a commission that decides everything, and unfortunately, the members of the committee for the board or whatever it is, the commission is appointed by the governor. So, not always. It's kind of ironic that they would appoint folks to the Fish and Game Commission that are not wildlife friendly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not to bash California, but
yeah.
That doesn't surprise me. You
can bash California. We live there and we do it. So, you would think that in that position you have a conservation-minded individual.
Yeah.
And, yeah. But anyways, that's we're still doing okay. We still have our seasons. We still have plenty of wildlife to harvest. So we're just keeping our fingers crossed.
Yeah, for now.
Yeah, agreed.
Oh, man. But all right, so let's get back to deer because that's what I had you on. I just wanted to touch on some of this other stuff. Now, as far as deer goes, technically you got mule deer, California blacktail or a Colombian blacktail, and then there's the hybrid, so to speak.
And the hybrid is kind of like it's always a touchy subject because you have and they did the same thing in Oregon, you know, because you have deer that are migrating, right? So they had to draw a line somewhere to make sure that there's no possible, you know, cross species introduction to, you know, Pope and Young and Boone and Crockett. You know, the basic basic boundaries were not created for what we would consider Columbia blacktail deer and mule deer. They were kind of created after the Pope and Young boundaries were created, and Fish and Game just kind of followed. Fish and Wildlife now followed suit. So the nice thing is, though, even though we have hybrid, bench legs, cross, whatever you want to call them, you know, you know, Boone and Crockett has a program now where you can actually send in a sample of your DNA of the animal you harvested if it's out of the boundary. And you think it's still that species, you can send in the DNA sample for $100, and if it comes back 90%, they'll actually put the animal in the record book for you, which is awesome.
That's cool.
Because it's supposed to be for the animal. It's not supposed to be for the hunter, you know. So it's to recognize, exceptional harvest of that species. So it's nice to have that. And, there's no doubt deer interbreed. You know, we have deer that migrate up to 90 miles in some locations, you know. So they have, it's no doubt a doe that winters in the eastern part of Shasta County by Redding, but it summers in Eagle Lake, which is right above Susanville. There's absolutely no doubt it's interacting with mule deer, you know, and during... the thing is, though, it's probably not interacting with those mule deer during the breeding, because the breeding happens, of course, after the migration.
Mm-hmm.
But there is definitely a probably should be at some time, but it would add more confusion. A central cross species, and maybe called something else, because it's just that, you know, that category's there.
Got it.
Yeah, and they're referring to them now as inland blacktails. So the species that's crossed is referred to in, at least there's a book, California Records of Big Game, and they're referred to as an inland blacktail in that book.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard that before. I've heard the term used before several times. And
I
knew somebody was recording them that way.
Yep, absolutely, yeah. But no, we have a really good opportunity at, you know, Columbia Blacktail and Mule Deer. Of course, the Mule Deer, you're going to have to draw a tag. They're all premium X units. You know, there is some land, private land management tags available for Mule Deer as well, just not very many. So really difficult to get a premium Mule Deer tag. Some of the other units, though, the X1s and the X4s, these units you can get probably with, every second or third year. So, and there's plenty of deer there to hunt, you know, archery or rifle if you put your homework in.
Right. What's your favorite hunt to do?
My favorite hunt is our wilderness, you know, spot and stock archery in the wilderness.
And that's where in the Trinity?
Any of the wildernesses for that matter, you know. But, you know, I have my favorites that, you know, I try not to share because there is no secret spot anymore. We all know that. There's no honey hole. The with the technology nowadays and the type of gear they give you that you can really get into wherever you want and hang out for a week or two and not have any difficulties. There's, you just gotta, you know, put in your homework and try to find the least populated area and the highest deer densities. And a lot of times, you know, as you know, high densities of deer brings the folks in there. So if you can find a place where there's not a lot of deer, but there's some good deer and not a lot of people, you know, nobody bothering you, I'll take that over a crowded area any day.
Yeah. No.
You know, especially for our archery, you know, archery is really, really critical. We had, break this up with a story, but, you know, we go into the wilderness most every year, and you would hope that people would recognize that there's other hunters in the area. And, you know, if they were there first, you know, give them a break and don't hunt the same animals. I mean, we had last year I saw some really nice deer in the wilderness, and they're deer that were harvestable. We could have easily had an opportunity to harvest a, you know, Boone and Crockett deer, but there was other hunters there, and they knew we were there, and they actually came into the same basin we were hunting from the upwind, you know, of us. You know, okay. They came in north of us, and the wind was blowing right into the basin, and I just watched them. And the deer that we were going to hunt, you know, that spot and stock, you just watch deer until they bed down, and you let them bed down for an hour, and then you hope they're solid and you can sneak up and have an opportunity. But, excuse me, these guys were going in with the wind blowing right into the basin. First morning, opening morning, they never even saw these bucks, but they blew out a doe. The doe ran across the entire basin right by the bucks. They had no idea that the guys were there, but just the fact that the doe was on alert, these bucks left like in a heartbeat and never saw them again in 6 days. So,
oh, jeez.
Yeah, and that's just how it works. And you would hope that and it's not even about so much about courtesy as it is, obviously, if you're hunting a certain basin and your wind's blowing down in there, you have to know it's going to be empty when you get there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, there's a way to hunt stuff, and hunter courtesy has really kind of gone away, which is sad because there's plenty of area, public land to hunt, plenty of deer to go hunt, and, you know, just because, you know, why should you foul up someone else's hunt just because you're not there first, you know?
Yeah, no, we see it all the time. It's terrible. Luckily, here in Arizona, I don't see a lot of, and it's probably, or mostly I would imagine it's because we have so much public land to hunt, but, and really all our public land is good. There's not, you know, I mean, there's always better spots than others, but I travel a lot to hunt, and I've definitely witnessed and been a part of a lot of, you know, what you just described. And it sucks. It sucks. You know, it's public land. You don't own it, but you would think, you know, you would think that there would be, like you said, some courtesy, you know, acknowledgement that, hey, these guys are here. Let's not booger them up. You know, let's move one basin over, you know,
yeah.
let's hike over one more ridge, something. Man, I bring up this story a lot. I was in Utah, and this honestly was like the worst that I have ever experienced. It was, this was a couple years ago. I was deer hunting by myself, and I can't tell you how many different times I was sitting there glassing, and then another hunter would come up and just start glassing beside me. And
right.
I was just baffled by it. And I was more baffled by it for the simple fact that they didn't even acknowledge that I was there. They didn't even say, like, hey, do you mind if I glass next to you? I'm not going to say no. You know, I don't own it.
Sure.
Or at least say, not even a nod. Hey, what's up? How you doing? You know, hi, something. Nothing.
Right.
Nothing.
Or, yeah, at least
and
going after
such a...
No.
Yeah, left such a bad taste in my mouth. And it's so funny. The only two guys that said, hey, do you mind if we glass from here, right here, were two guys that had just moved to Arizona. They were from Arizona. They lived in Lake Havasu or something like that at the time. And it was a father and son. And I became friends with them. And I actually hunted with them on that trip and helped them pack out a deer. Like, it's, you know, it's so crazy, like, how people, you know, you might be missing. You know, I'm after a certain caliber of deer, you know, and they were not. And I was like, well, you know, hey, yeah, there's this over there, this over there. And I would have, you know, you never know what you're missing if you don't, like, you know, show some common respect and courtesy to other people. It's just, it's funny, but.
Yeah, like you said,
I say never, it's funny. It's not funny. It's sad, but
no, it's real. It's real for sure. And like you said, you know, you're looking for a certain caliber of deer, as am I. You know, you want to. You're to that sportsman stage where you're shooting mature animals, and this person might be just harvesting some meat. So, I mean, you might have seen five or six bucks that you had no interest in, but they could easily take and harvest and be done with their hunt. You know, it's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, just another thing that we're doing to ourselves.
Yeah. You know, hunters are our own worst enemies, and unfortunately, we don't stop correcting some of this stuff. We're gonna be in some serious trouble.
We are, you know, arguing amongst ourselves, but you know, and you know, I've got, you know, we do a lot of pigs up there in California, as you know, right? And so it's kind of like all year, really lucrative harvesting. So it's a fun thing to do when you're not doing, you know, big game hunting, or you're in between, or you just have a group of guys who want to go up and have some fun and, you know, no pressure hunt, right? So an exciting thing for us, you know, with Just for Hunting, our business there, we actually are doing a hunt here in a couple weeks with Outside Magazine. So, and if you're familiar with Outside Magazine, they've kind of, you know, they've always been a fairly, they're a, you know, a green magazine, I guess, conservation magazine, but fairly liberal has been their mantra in the past. But they actually are, they have editorials now in the magazine on conservation and wildlife, you know, and so they're, you know, and I think that what brought this about is a lot of it was the public land grab in the West here recently when the government was threatening to sell our public lands, right? So, so what's happened is the Outside Magazine really has put forth some effort and good effort to let, you know, these same recreational people, recreational minded people that are really, we're all vying for the same resource, right? So, so they're letting folks know that conservation, really the only money that goes on the ground comes from hunters and the hunting community.
Yeah,
you know,
and that's important.
Because
it's,
real money.
It's so it's void. It's void. You know, in public knowledge, if you're not a hunter, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
But within the non-hunting public, it's void. Nobody knows that. They just think like, oh, the government pays for it, but our tax money pays for it. And we're like, no, it doesn't. You know, it comes from this right here, you know.
Yeah, the tax dollars that we pay, you know, it runs the government group or the government agency that, you know, that runs the land. But as far as any work that's done to the land and improvements, that comes from conservation groups that, you know, like Ducks Unlimited, you know, National Wild Turkey Federation, Rocky Mountain Elk, all these groups. And the nice thing is Outside Magazine recognizes that, and they're bringing it to the attention of their readers that are using the same resource. And, you know, most of them, their readers are, you know, organic or natural people. So what other better natural food is there than, you know, wildlife, you know?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, so it's a kind of an exciting new finger that's going to actually, it's going to bring some attention to it and some quality recognition of what conservation is about, and then hopefully it'll introduce some more hunters to our hunting community that you know, are really there to treat the land as it should be treated.
Yeah, no, and that's super important. Before we got on this morning, I was working on an article about hunter recruitment, and you know, because the big consensus among hunters is like, why do I want to bring in? You know, they're okay with bringing in kids, you know, introducing kids to it, but unfortunately, the kids aren't going to go hunting unless they're going hunting with you. They're unable to buy their own bows. They're unable to, you know, drive themselves to go hunting and so on and so forth. So, and I'm speaking specifically of kids that don't have hunting parents. So, you know, if you're introducing kids, it's great. I want you to, but I think it's real important that people start introducing non-hunter adults into hunting. That's where the solution lies. I started thinking about this a couple of years ago, and really now that it's kind of coming a little bit more mainstream, I've been a lot more vocal about it. But I think one of the main things is if your spouse doesn't hunt, you know, get your spouse into hunting. If you're afraid of competition or creating competition, you know, bringing your spouse is not competition. You know what I'm saying? And it still gives us what we need. We still checks another box in as a hunter, buying a hunting license, spending money in hunting. And, you know, yeah, your spouse may only go once or twice a year, but that's huge for us. You know, just think about it right now. If there's, I don't know how many women there are hunting at the moment, but I'm going to give arbitrary number. Let's say, you know, out of the 11, I think we have 11 million hunters in North America now, or in the United States, rather. Let's say, I don't know, 9 million are males, and 7 million of those 9 million males are married, and they brought in, everybody brought their wife on board, you know? That just jumped our numbers way up without having a huge impact on everybody's hunting, you know? And that's what everybody's worried about. I don't want my hunting to be impacted, but it's not going to be around much longer. Right now we've been losing 500,000 hunters per year since, I think, 2011. Well, since 2011 to 2011 to 2016, we lost 2.2 million hunters in the United States.
Yeah, and it continues to spiral.
Yeah, and one of the things that came up was that the lion's share, or that the largest population fell within the average, and the average is adult males age 50, so there's a bunch of the majority of hunters out there are 50 years old. Could you imagine what happens in 15, 20 years when they're 70 years old and, you know, they're retiring from hunting? They're going to have a giant drop off.
Yeah. And the unfortunate thing is a lot of it is frustration with game management. But at the same time, you know, you can't let that, if you really enjoy hunting, you can't let that stop you, because you can always find an opportunity, you know.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you were talking about, you know, high pressure. We were talking about this a little bit ago. You know, I grew up, well, I don't know, it's hard to say I grew up in New York, because I lived in Arizona since I'm 16, but I lived in New York, and going hunting in New York on opening day in the 80s was literally a war zone, you know? But
yeah,
my dad always had success, because he always kind of, he used other people. You know, he used the pressure to his own, you know, his own advantage. I watched him and things that my dad did. It's one of the few things that I learned, like, actual hunting things from my dad, because he wasn't a really, like, I wouldn't say he wasn't a student of the, you know, of the trade. But one of the things I learned from him was, you know, thinking outside the box. And, you know, I adopted that into my skill set growing up and started bow hunting and whatever. And, you know, like, I hunt, like, in New York, I hunt little 5-acre parcels, like, nestled in between houses and whatnot, that just happens to be public land that people don't know about. Or, you know, just, it's really just finding, you know, needles in the haystack. But, and
yeah, and with our,
and just thinking differently, you know.
Yeah, and our technology nowadays, you know, OnX maps, all these mapping programs, all these resources we have, there's no excuse for not being in a place where you have an opportunity for harvest, regardless of,
right,
of where you're hunting. You know, you should know already before you get there that there's an animal there that you're going to have an opportunity at.
Yeah, no, for sure. And yeah. I mean, I'm not quite sure how many acres of public land we have in the United States. But I think it's something like 200 million acres. So, I mean, if let's say we have 11 million hunters, but, you know, 200 million, divide that by 11 million, you know, that's still 18 acres per person if everybody went to go hunt on the same day, you know? I don't know. There's just, I'm grasping at straws here, but it's just like, I don't know. I get the competition thing. I think about it myself often, but there's ways around it. There's ways to still get what we want with increased numbers and whatnot. So, but
oh, absolutely.
I digress.
And the nice thing is, what those more numbers, greater numbers, are going to bring greater finance and conservation, which is going to, you know, not only increase the wildlife numbers, you know, but it probably reintroduce and maintain some of the ones that aren't doing so well.
Right. Yep. Exactly.
It's crazy. Well, we kind of got off on a necessary tangent there, but that's you know, it's kind of like all this stuff. It doesn't matter if it's California, Wyoming, you know, Arizona, New Mexico, Iowa, Ohio, wherever. If we can't continue to spiral like we're doing, we're all going to be struggling to find a place to go hunting or even have hunting available. So, yeah, we definitely need to join our efforts as hunters or even conservationists for that matter. And people need to understand that you don't need to be a hunter to be a conservationist, you know. You can, if you like going out and taking pictures of wildlife, you know, you better make sure that wildlife is taken care of and it's going to be there for you to take pictures even in the future, you know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. And absolutely. Actually, the fact that we're on, you know, California and it's, you know, it's hunting regulations and opportunity is, I don't want to say ironic, but it kind of is, because California is probably the, you know, the biggest land area, single state-wise, and has the most variety of opportunity that's just not being managed.
Yeah.
Correctly managed, yeah. I should say.
Well, you also have some of the largest cities, and those cities are filled with people who are not conservation minded or definitely not hunting minded. So, you know.
Yeah. Absolutely, which is a shame, because they're, you know, they're just uneducated. You know, they're out, they're thinking that they're pulling the hunting from a certain species is protecting that species, when really it's not.
Right.
What you should do is, you know, conservation and manage that species. I mean, it's, we all know, and, you know, when the 1900s rolled over, we were, and the entire United States was lacking in all species. And, you know, with, you know, folks like Adolf, Aldo Leopold and Teddy Roosevelt and, you know, all these guys that introduced conservation. I mean, they right. recognized it was necessary, because we weren't, you know, people think that we're brutal nowadays. I mean, prior to game management, I mean, folks were shooting anything and everything.
Yeah, well, yeah, there was market hunting back then, you know. It wasn't just sport hunting or subsistence hunting, you know.
Right, exactly. So a lot of those, you know, conservation regulations that were implemented in the early 1900s that are still in place, you know, without those, we probably wouldn't be hunting anything right now. We'd be having all these endangered or extinct species.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But we need to continue to grow in conservation like that. But, yeah, it's It's definitely a chore to educate the non-hunting community on the value of hunting. And like you said, if we don't have hunters, bonding together, and if we continue to combat each other, we'll never get there. You know, be classy in your photographs. You don't need to show off any brutal or, videos and stuff. With the internet nowadays, I mean, every time you put something on there, there's 20 million people looking at it. So,
right, exactly.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother topic.
Yeah, we could go on and on and on.
Very, very easy to go down to, go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, it is. But yeah, but back to California, we get shortchanged in California just because of how we're labeled politically. But wildlife wise, I mean, we abound with wildlife, and there's opportunity there for sure.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for coming on and shedding some light on hunting in California. If you guys want to get out and do some, do some hunting in July or whatever, and try your hand at going to hunt Cali, get out there in some early seasons before some of your other seasons start, and something to do. Nice getaway. California's got beautiful landscape, and it's just, it's a good time. I enjoy it. Go ahead.
Yeah, and we're up in Northern California, and we always specify Northern California. We have, five wildernesses within 2 hours of us that'll get you to 9,000 feet. It might get hot. Like John said, it's hot in July. But you can combat that by in just 30 or 40 minutes being another couple thousand or 3,000 feet higher and in the mountains. And of course, with migrating deer up in the mountains, the archery hunting is good. And if you're not participating in California, it's never too late. You can always get into the point system just like anywhere else in the West. There's some desirable species, premium species, pigs, deer. There's always something you can draw and go hunting in California.
Yeah, that's for sure. Hey, go take out some pigs. They're good
pigs,
eating, and we need to get rid of them.
Yeah, pigs are actually the number one game animal in California.
Yeah. Well, cool. Where can our listeners find out more about you?
Well, you can pick us up on justforhunting.com on the web. Or if you'd rather phone, it's 650-888-0808. And it doesn't matter if you want to go hunting with Just for Hunting or if you just have a question about California. I've been hunting for 40 years, putting myself out in the woods there in California and definitely helping folks. So if you have any questions or if you want to come out and do a pig hunt, a deer hunt, we do pack-in hunts. We have some elk tags, anything. We have antelope, anything you want to hunt out there, just give a shout, and definitely we can fix you up.
Well, sweet. Well, Perry, thanks for coming on, and I'm sure you and I will talk soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, John. We'll talk to you soon, buddy.
All right, have a good one.